This is
BBC.
BBC Radio.
Six music. Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Cat Power.
I'm Matt Everett and welcome to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. This week's guest has been releasing music for 25 years and she's let her songwriting style and production skills take her off across a universe of sounds and genres. From lo-fi New York rock to employing Memphis soul legends, from fragile folk to electronics, the only thing her albums have got in common is the honesty and fearlessness of her lyrics. Her latest album, Wanderer, sees her embrace a kind of modern country blues and she's still opening up her heart for every song that she writes. And this might be some of her best ever work. My guest on the first time this week is Sean Marshall, also known as Cat Power.
Hotel streets and ships that sail.
Here we talk about Sean's earliest musical passions, the impact of the church and gospel music on her, the music scene she witnessed in and around her home city of Atlanta, and the life-changing discovery of punk music in the form of Husker Du and the Misfits. We also talk about how an initial fear of the recording studio evolved into her role as a respected producer and discuss her relationship with live performances, a relationship that in the past has proved a fractious one. And she picks some great music from Can, Aretha Franklin and Nina Simone. But I started by asking Sean, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time she was aware of music?
The first time I was aware of it?
Yeah.
Are you really actually asking me that?
I'm really actually asking you that, yes.
My grandma, when I was born, my grandma picked me up from the hospital. She raised me till I was 4 and a half. Around the house, growing up with her, you know, with my grandma, was Johnny Cash, Hank Williams, hymns, Southern Baptist. So hymns and some standards, you know. There's that one song, I don't know if you know that song, put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. Press your warm and tender body. Do you know that song?
All alone. I'll tell the man to turn the jukebox way down low. And you can tell your friend there with you, he'll have to go.
If the radio wasn't on, she would just be singing, you know, all day while cooking, you know. So a lot of the cooking represented joy for me and the music together. I think that's why I love food so much, too. But just always singing all kinds of music. So it would have been from when I was born was the beginning of that.
So was it the first time that you sung in public? Would that have been at church then?
Oh, absolutely. I'll fly away, oh Lordy, I'll fly away.
Did you enjoy singing, or was it something that you just?
Of course,
you did? Okay.
It was like swinging from a tree. You know, it was just, especially I think in the cocoon of love with my grandmother's, you know, nurturing and soft, you know, gentle. I think when you're older, you are more chilled out as a human in general. So being raised by her was, it just super chill. And she's a farmer's daughter, so you wake up and you're just singing with your grandma. It's like super normal. Later on, from my father, who I discovered was a singer, and my stepfather, who was also a musician. And
so can you remember?
My mom had the same vein, I guess, being raised by my grandmother. So she was always, you know, cooking and singing. You know, Cat Scratch Fever, there were different tunes going on with my mom.
Do you remember going and buying your first piece of music that you owned, like the first single or the first album? You're laughing again.
Yeah, so it was my 11th birthday, I might have been 11 turning 12 birthday, and my mom had given my sister, I think, $5 or something to get my birthday present, you know, to surprise me. But so we went together to the Camelot Music Store at the mall outside of McLeansville, North Carolina, and I didn't know what to get. There was like Pussy Galore. I'm looking at my sister's finger scrolling down the things, and then below that was just white with black letters, Husker Du, with these omelets, Metal Circus. And she pulled it out of the thing and she's like, happy birthday. And I think she kept the change and whatever, but I was just so excited because she knew, you know, she knew more about music and stuff. Because when I played the Metal Circus, when I heard Diane, my brain just then, you know, this learning, like pubescent age, learning that this must be about rape, you know, just, you know, how lyrics and, like, you know, like listening to Bob Dylan the first time, you know, around the same time, you know, listening to like a Rolling Stone or Blowing in the Wind or Idiot Wind or whatever, listening to these lyrics at the same time, just same with like any punk. Or also lyrics, just, you don't even know what the hell is going on, you don't know what really anything means, but you know that you're learning so much and you just become like a junk fiend, you junkie, you just, oh my god, I've got to find this radio station, oh my god, do you have that? Oh, you have that cassette, can I borrow it? You know, just the, it was very hard to find these little kids at different schools that I went to that knew about these little, these things, you know, that were so important.
But that makes it all the more precious if as you say, there's just little pockets of people, little, you know, it's not about what everybody likes. It's kind of cool being part of the gang that knows about the little secret bands.
I think also being the only, like the new kid, I don't know if you've ever left school and had to move to another location growing up, but I was always the new kid at school, moving around all the time as a kid. So I think that the objectification I found myself in of like looking out, always looking out, you know, behaviorally, I learned from a young age, like, you know, who was kind, who was not. Who was in, you know, I was never part of a clique, for instance, like, you know, the hippies, the stoners, the athletes.
Yeah.
And athletes are different. You got the football players, the soccer players, and the you know, whatever. My point is that I think you said, yeah, it's like those pockets. I think that everybody has their own, there are diverse reasons why people look a little closer at the shadows to find, to really see what the truth is in situations. And we're not alone. They're everywhere.
That's nicely put. First gig that you went to that really made an impact was the one that you stumbled
okay,
out.
So
stunned.
Impact would be a surprise. 6 years old, roller skates, a parking lot of the bar across the street from the apartment complex that I lived in Atlanta. It was in the afternoon. The bar was called, it still is called this, Aunt Charlie's. This is post-hippie. This is, you know, 70s. So things are, there's afros now. There's no beads. There's just no shirts on, basically. Like, there's like a, what do you call it? It's a little more like sweaty glam than sweaty beads. But the song, the band was like a, my mom, you know, my mom, dad, stepdad, they're all friends together and whatever. And so everybody's bands were playing and whatever in the parking lot, and it was this guy, and I thought, my whole life I thought it was Eric Clapton because the song, but it wasn't, but the song was Cocaine. It was the coolest sounding song, you know, because I've been at other concerts, you know, like this exact typical scenario, like Keggers and the Country, Charlie Daniels or Allman Brothers and things like this. But this was like in Atlanta, it was in the city, in a parking lot, across from the bar we went to every night, you know, after my mom got off work from the sandwich shop or whatever. So it was so beautiful. It was so cool. This is the first time I knew that something sounded cool. The way that the notes, the way that he's, you know, cocaine, it just sounded so cool.
Radio 6 Music.
When you start playing and performing, who did you want to be? Who would you
want to be?
Imagine yourself to be. Who are the?
I was having the hardest time just trying to definitely be myself. I think that was the whole thing about growing up, was that all these I used to call it classification orientation, walking in these new schools all the time with everybody needing divinely to fit exactly into their perfect clique. So I never, ever, ever wanted to be like someone else. If I could have like perfect, you remember the feathered hair, like the perfect feathered hair?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
From the 70s, split down the middle. It's like, you know, these chicks at the, and these dudes at the roller skating rinks, they always had like from the center, like just split down these perfect wings that look like the entire side of the, go down to their shoulder, one massive wing, and but on either side of their hair perfectly sprayed, and they'd roller skate, but it wasn't like a hard spray, it just naturally looked incredible,
like a golden angel bounce.
I didn't want to be anybody, but I always wanted to have those beautiful wings. But for music, I think the drummer from Can.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, loving, wishing that I could play like that. I remember being a thought many times.
Should we pick a Can song?
Mushroom. Yeah, that's the one you should play.
Oh,
I know that Aretha Franklin is one of your heroes. Did you dream of being that kind of singer?
Sometimes, you know, loving to sing like Aretha Franklin, something, you know, and knowing that I'd never be good enough to sing like that, you know, things like that, but never wanting to be somebody, you know what I mean? And the Aretha song, It Ain't Fair.
Why that song?
Oh, my Lord. Scrambling through my dad's records. I think I was 13, might have been 14. And I found, you know, just a ton of albums. And I knew who Aretha Franklin was because of all the, you know, songs and a lot of the covers. And I pulled it out because I knew she was, you know, Friendly Face. And I played... You know what? That's when I heard the song. That's right. That's when I heard that record. But it wasn't until I was 17 when that is one of the only songs I had to play, that song, like Medicine. You know, from the moment I got home from work, I had to just play it. That's just what I had to do. So It Ain't Fair was the only thing that could, like, absolve the pain. But the first time that I... Because I knew her songs, you know, as a kid. But the first time that I understood what she meant to the world and to me and to heaven and if whatever you want a description, heaven could be nerve. I don't know what I'm saying, but I was home from school. I was sick. I was living with my dad at the time. And I believe it was the day that the rocket exploded in the sky and I was sick. It was my birthday week. And I was watching PBS, Public Broadcasting Channel, and I was so sad about the rocket exploding in the sky and the people being dead. I turned the channel and there was black and white file footage from 1964, Aretha Franklin singing black and white file footage, and she's singing, and I wasn't sure if they were tears or sweat that were streaming down her face, but that's when I got that shot, you know. That's the first time I really got that shot. I just was just bawling uncontrollably, like I was saved, you know, by her. So that file footage live song, I don't know where it is, but It Ain't Fair is something that I needed really badly when I was 17. People all around me, but I don't even have a friend. Lord knows I've been trying, and he knows I just can't win. Everything I do, we'll be right back.
This is the first time with me, Matt Everett, and that was It Ain't Fair by Aretha Franklin, the brilliant choice of my guest here on the first time this week, Sian Marshall, also known as Cat Power.
This is BBC Radio 6
Music.
Now on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 6
Music.
Welcome back, I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on 6 Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Sian Marshall, also known as Cat Power. And that was The Greatest, the title track from her seventh studio album from 2005. As well as being a singer, guitarist and keyboardist, in recent years Sian has taken full control of her records and the role of producer. But I asked her if she could remember her very first recording session.
It was like getting an MRI.
Okay, go
That's
on.
How it felt like getting, like, I've had this in a few times when I've been, like, emotionally distraught, or there's really something that I'm going through and I have no one to share it with or something, and I have to get my picture taken, and you need to look at the camera, and it really feels like that old thing, you know, my heritage, Native American. It feels like getting your soul stolen. That's how it feels, and that's how it felt. It felt, you know, it was entering, because perhaps it's airtight, right? So, you know, we all have, like, our energy that flies off our body, and, like, we must tail around a little bit of the other dimension, must be a part of our aura. We all must carry a little bit of some other dimension around with us. So being trapped in this room with, like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, with the ultimatum of the moment, the ultimatum of every second being preserved forever, was so intense that it was like drilling my own cavity, you know. It was not pleasurable in the least.
Has that left you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I know exactly what the hell's going on. I walk in, sometimes I'll go to the control room, but really it's just, you know, when I walk in, I like to set up the stations, you know. I need, okay, let's start here with the piano, let's get, you know, a couple compression mics, a couple different vocal mics, one room mic, you know, overhead, and then let's do the amps, let's set up a couple different mics, blah, 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 overhead, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with the drums and the vocal station. So I like to get that all, like, done, and then I start working and, of course, check out all the... But before I've gone in, I know what's in the... what kind of gear's in the control room, making sure it's sweet and warm.
I do want to ask you about the live shows, because there was a kind of reputation for the shows being really...
Be careful.
Right, now, listen, hear me out here, because I've got a theory about this. Because I think people say they kind of really want their... Oh, we want our musicians to be uninhibited and spontaneous. But when that actually happens, people are quite scared and they maybe don't know how to process it.
That's so sweet of you to say.
No,
thank
this
you.
This is not, I think also, like, when musicians are genuinely angry on stage, you almost want to, hey, they're swinging from a bottle, and hey, they might fall over. That's so cool. But actually, when confronted with people who genuinely are being spontaneous, the audience don't know how to process it, because it is unpredictable in a way that you don't get anywhere else. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and no one's ever described that. Described that thing that does and can happen. Yeah, it's not. This whole thing about the spectacle, you know, the propaganda around expectation in general of everybody, on them, on me, on it. It's all over the place. You know, Jonathan Richman, you know, I think it was 15-something, 18 years ago, we were in Iceland. We happened to be playing the same show, and I was solo, and he had Tommy, his drummer. And after the show, I was with one of my best friends from New York, and we went back to the hotel. Me and Tommy and Jonathan and my friend Terry Gillis, we all went back to my room and, you know, just get our drinking our wine, having our talks. And because it was freezing ass, you know, it was winter. And we're talking and this and that, and I had a hard time with... The monitors were too bright, you know, and if people out there don't understand what that means, it's hard to relax it's hard to sing out if it's too bright, because it's like singing through shards of glass that are stabbing you in your soul throat. I don't know how to describe it.
Wow.
But, so... And I started to cry in my room because Terry's a, you know, she's a little older than me. And she comes from another land, you know, she's like post-hippie vibe. And she's like, I don't know, Sean, if it were me up there, I'd be dancing and slapping my butt and shaking my thing and doing my stuff. And I just got up and it made me cry because, you know, this is one of my oldest friends. And like, if you don't know what I'm about, you know that that's the last thing I'm interested in. But, and so I didn't close the door all the way to the bathroom, and I opened the window and cried through the window, looked at the moon, and I heard, I was having a difficult time, I'll tell you, but in life in general, 18, 20 years ago, but so weren't we all, but sometimes, and Jonathan goes, you know, Terry, let me put it to you this way. Imagine being a matador, you know, the bull and the matador. Imagine you're in the ring, you're the bull, and there's the matador, and you got all those people looking at you. They don't know, the people don't know if they want to see the matador kill the bull or they want to see the bull survive. That's a lot of pressure, Terry. Then I stopped crying and felt a lot better. And so when you say something like that to me after all the times the journalists have said to me, your show has been quite erratic since you've began and like a train wreck and can quote here. You know, it's heartbreaking because, yeah, just because one journalist, you know, went to a show in 1998 where I collapsed at the release of Moonpix, the first time journalists were coming to my show for release of an album, and nobody knows the story that there was a guy with a semi-automatic that was backstage that I had kicked out. And when I told them on my record label that this guy has a gun, they didn't believe me because I'm the crazy artist, and I watched this guy surf the room and come closer to me. That's why I nosedive and crawled off the stage and begged for the cops. So no one knows that, but I can guarantee you that every journalist that night wrote that story, and no one's heard what I just told you before.
Yeah, so as I say, people say they want one thing, but I don't think they really understand it, you know.
No, they don't. That's why we're all looking in the shadows, as frightening as it may be.
Every night, walk through people who walk too close into each other. They're hanging. I am told there's a mother you may remember. In the name of the father, but never the ghost. Me, I use the money for those just as hard who hung his head for the ladies or pretended he did.
He did, she did, he did, we did.
She loves you, she loves you, she loves you so hard. The one person to have you cannot. But Charlie is a sinner, tell me teacher. You put on your light and then you turn around. Silent machine is here to meet ya. You put on your light and then turn around.
Radio 6 Music.
There's a really lovely quote from you, which I hope is correct. When you're talking about when you're talking about songwriting, you said it's like there's a vibration in the room that fills up the void, fills up the ears and the body, and out comes the melody and the words, always
correct.
Together, Always together? That's rare.
Of course. Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, I mean, generally in music, it tends not to be a simultaneous birth, does it not? With you, it's always been like that.
I don't know anything about these people. All I know is what I know, and I do not take it for granted, and it's a reserved. When it comes, you know, I reserve space for it and to let it be, and that's that. And I'm so lucky to be having this conversation with you, with the BBC. You know, to be doing what I'm doing in my life, to be able to sing, number one, to be able to sing, which brings great healing, I think, to both sides of the, you know, to everyone. I think music is healing, and to also be able to, you know, have words that do the same thing. I'm very blessed, lucky, thankful, and I don't take it for granted, and that's why I'm so serious. That's why I'm, you know, if people say it's a train wreck, it's because maybe it doesn't mean everything to everybody else, but it's the only shot I have to be in that room with a few of those people that it means something to. And so I'm trying to make it count, and that's what I'm focusing on. That's why I take it seriously, and you know, the song is what I'm there for, blah, blah, blah.
You say you make time for it. Do you go and find a shady tree to wait for the muse to come visit?
Never. No. It's just like...
Or does it hit like you like a...
No, it's like the recording button is on. Oh, you know, it's just like I said, the vibration, it just fills you up. And, you know, I'm not sure if it feels like it's going to be tears or it's going to be gold dust or some sort of swirling color. I don't know what it is that's got subconsciously not just Sean. I don't know. You know, are you there? I'm waiting. I'm right here. You know, whatever. It's just creep away. It's just creep away. Grab the guitar. Go over to the piano. Get whatever I. You know, that's what that is. And now it is the, you know, what sucks is I have this iPhone situation, and so I always used to use the tape cassettes, you know, which I just found last week when I was cleaning my closet. Thank goodness, so that's great. But these iPhones, you know, with the voice recorder and things, I've been like lazy with that since I've been a parent. So just like, oh, I have to go do this. Oh, I have to go do this right now. You know, and then I have the voice recorder, so there it is. But I don't trust it one damn bit, so I'm going to go back to the cassettes.
If you know people who know me, you might want them to speak, to tell you about the girl or the woman they know, more than you think you know about me. More than you think you know me. See you walking in circles. See you talking in circles. See your thoughts running in circles. I walk around all day long following me. Doctor said I was better than ever. Man, you should have seen me. Thank you.
No, I'm not like those other ones.
Your cage is like a weapon, a tool for me. You think I'm like the other ones? Well, my cage is a weapon, it's perfect for me. It's the one suit that seem to not see. I'm a woman of my word. Now you have heard my words, the only thing I truly need. Woman, 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 woman. Woman, 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 woman. Woman, woman, woman.
The final question we ask everybody is, you get to pick the last song we play in the show, so...
Oh my goodness gracious.
I know, and we don't give you a lot of warning because then people think about it too much. It's always better to go in spontaneous. It can be one of yours, one of someone else's, something okay. You heard this morning, or something you've loved your whole life.
Funkier Than a Mosquito's Tweeter, Nina Simone.
Oh, okay, why?
Wise One. Why that song?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you know, what's the hashtag? Woke. Woke AF. Thank you.
You're nothing but a dirty, dirty old man. You do your thinking with a one-track mind. You keep talking about heaven glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap. Your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth. Your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do. You know you're funkier than a mosquito's tweeter. You got a mouth like a herd of boll weavers. Same old game, same old thing. You never change, always rapping about the same old thing. Something to tell you, baby, but you ain't hip to, baby. Blowing minds is a thing of the past. You blew your chance, that's why you never last. You wanna be a graduated mother, but in reality you're just another brother. You think you slick, but you could stand a lot of greasing. Things you do ain't never really pleasing. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around to see what you do. You know you're funkier than a mosquito's tweeter. You got a mouth like a herd of boll weavers. Same old game, same old thing.
nothing worse than an educated fool. Talking sex is your favorite conversation, but peace and love is a famous generation. What's in your head is really started showing. Your conversation is getting kind of boring.
Six Music.
On a sign that sat up all night shivering. On a sign that sat up all night free. One that shines on the oasis that leads a man to drink. Drunk on the kind of applause that gets louder. Though you sink, gratitude walks. Gratitude walks. Gratitude walks on Sixth Street. Pull it from the air. Push him down if he should try and run. Gratitude walks. Gratitude walks. Gratitude walks on Sixth Street. Decided to give it a go, and it caught your ear. When
is BBC Radio
6 Music.
This morning from 11, Huey Morgan.
At 8, Radcliffe and McConey.
Right now,
it's Chris Hawkins.
Boy, and tears, boy, and all in your inner space, boy, ahead.